Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Hey everyone, welcome to Exploring the Wine Glass. On today's episode, I am sitting down with some wine friends to bring you another installment of Wine Writers Wrap Up. With all that is going on in the world, I needed a happy break. I wanted a little reprieve from all the bad and just wanted to have a conversation about something we all love, wine. I had one rule for the discussion, and that was there could be no mention of COVID-19 or social distancing. So I hope you enjoy this 1 hour break from all the insanity as we discuss the concept of a unicorn wine. Interestingly enough, I thought this was a common term, but as I learned, it is not as widespread a concept as I had originally thought. So have you heard of a unicorn wine? Do you have a unicorn wine? What would you do if you finally acquired your unicorn wine? These are just some of the questions we pondered during the chat. Please take the time to subscribe, rate, and review Exploring the Wine Glass. And if you're on the socials, please give me a shout out and let me know your thoughts on unicorn wines. Sláinte! Hey, everybody. Welcome to a Wine Writers Wrap Up. And, you know, today is March 31st or whatever. And it is day whatever of quarantine, and I am tired of hearing about quarantine. I am tired of hearing about social distancing. I am all for it. I am hoping that we come out of this quickly, and I am hoping that everybody stays safe, but I needed to talk about something other than this. So I reached out, and my wonderful wine writing friends agreed to pop on today. And the rule is no quarantine, no COVID-19, no self-isolation. Anything is allowed. Okay. I wish I had a big horn, because if you said it, I would like the horn to you. Okay. All right. But anyways, so today, instead of that, we are talking about magic. We are talking about magic in the wine world and about a unicorn wine. Is there such a thing? Should there be such a thing? Have we actually ever seen this illustrious, magical creature? And so that is where we are going today. So if you guys can introduce yourselves for a little bit, tell people who you are, where you're coming from, and we'll get into it. Oh, Nicole, you're big for me, so go ahead.
Okay, my name is Nicole Ruiz Hudson, and I blog at both the Nibbling Gypsy and the Songs Table. So at Nibbling Gypsy and at the Songs Table on Instagram. I also occasionally write for Wine Spectator. I do a wine pairing column there. Yeah, that's me. Drinking at home today.
Okay. Maria.
Hey, I'm Maria from Wine and Cheese Friday. I'm joining you guys today from Costa Rica, and I'm excited to talk wine. Let's do it.
Yay. Michael?
I'm Michael Kelly. I've got a website, California Wines and Wineries. I also have a blog, California Wines and Wineries, hosted this last year a Cab Franc wine competition. Somebody very near and dear to us won the professional judges award. Won't mention any names. Somebody can see somebody smiling. They have to win. It was a blind tasting, and it was very interesting that she won from the professionals. And do a variety of other things. A wine judge at local competitions when they're not being canceled, et cetera, et cetera. Almost said something.
And Deb.
I'm Debbie Giaquindo. I write under the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a wine blogger and writer. I'm a certified specialist of wine and a wine location specialist in Port and Champagne. I am author of a book called Tapping the Hudson Valley, Day Trips and Weekend Itineraries, Visiting the Hudson Valley Wine Region. And I am co-owner of a restaurant in Stone Harbor, New Jersey called which is 3:30, which we are opening Friday for delivery.
All right, awesome. And I am your host, Lori Budd. My husband, Michael, and I own the winery Dracena Wines in Paso Robles, which might have won that particular competition of Best Cabernet Franc in California. And we just have received that wonderful email that said we got another 92 in Wine Enthusiasts for our classic Cabernet Franc. So thank you. So if you are into Cab Franc, we are where you should be, and you can find us at DracenaWines.com. So everybody, how is everybody? Are people drinking?
Hey, drinking.
I switched, Nicole. I went on to this, and I thought that since the topic, this is how my brain works, right? Since the topic is unicorn wine that, you know, we just can't quite get, you know, it's usually something of extreme high quality or something like that, but we'll get into that later. I opened up the wine cellar before, and I was like, holy cow, there's a 2015 rosé. nothing left in this wine. But that is what I am, that's why I'm going with. And as you can see, the color has completely been altered as it has oxidized, and so has the flavor. But it's too late. I can't get up to go get another bottle. So this is what I will be drinking. Michael, I'm sorry, did you have wine?
Yes, it's Natural Springs from Mount Shasta area in California. We're having barbecue hamburgers tonight. And so I did not feel like I wanted to open a $250, $300 bottle of wine for burgers. And my wife had a similar put the hands up, no. So we're going with a simple wine tonight for dinner. But I have wines that I will talk about later.
Oh, okay. I've just gotten into two bottles now. We just do two bottles now.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I guess I should shout out that Lori and I were on a chat earlier today. So I still have the bottle open from the Coleman Land, the Land Coleman Reserva. To 2011, and that's really nice. I think I'm trying to save that for dinner later.
And I will say that was a beautiful wine, and they had recommended opening for an hour prior, and I listened, and as we were on the chat for the hour, it evolved. By the end of the chat, it was blow your mind. So. Deb, you drinking?
I am drinking. I have a 2016 Hudson Valley Wine Region Millbrook Cab Franc.
Oh.
The bottle downstairs because Paul's drinking it too. So I got sent up to my office with a glass.
There you go. And Maria, what about you? Are you drinking?
Yeah, Chilean Carmenere tonight. It's a wine I've tried before. And we opened it a day or two ago. We're actually wine rationing now because this is our last regular bottle of wine and we have a bottle of sparkling. So I have some to drink with you guys and a little bit more to drink with dinner, and that's the end of it.
Oh no. Oh, we need a replenishing run then. All right. So thank you guys for joining. I am so happy to see all your faces and hear your voices. I have a very, definitive opinion, although those of you who really know me know that's really not very strange to have a definitive opinion on anything. But about these unicorn wines. So my first question to you guys is, how would you define a unicorn wine? So, Michael, how would you define a unicorn wine?
Well, I guess the way I took the topic, which I've never heard of unicorn wine until this broadcast, so that was an interesting phrase. But I assumed it's something that is rare, very seldom seen, if you kind of describe a unicorn. But you don't want to say mythical, but you very seldom seen. Unique, and it's kind of princely, charming, fairy tale like. It was so good.
All right. That sounds like a wonderful description. Nicole, anything to add to that description?
No
or change?
Having never heard of unicorn wines before, they might have got it like kind of hit the nail on the head.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Maria or Debbie, anything to add to?
I have nothing to add because I didn't know what it was. So, you know, something unattainable, or it might be attainable in the right circle.
Maria, had you heard of it before?
I had not heard of a unicorn wine either, so I actually just Googled it yesterday so I could see what it meant. But I had guessed that it was something like unattainable or something that you had always strived for to taste or something along those lines. I also did want to add, you heard some noises earlier. That is the bugs that are in the background right now. I decided to sit outside instead of inside because the lighting is usually so bad inside. I was trying it out to be different, but between my internet interference and the bugs, we'll see how long I can last.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh, now I'm like all blah. Okay. So now I'm gonna say, Nicole, why are we the only two ever heard of this? Because in my brain, this was like world known terminology.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Like I think it comes, it's like one of those Instagram hashtags. I don't know how, I feel like most of us are on Instagram, yeah. But I feel like that's one of those things that like Psalms put on their wines, all their bottle pictures all the time. So, Maybe I've just been spending too much time on social media.
Maybe. You and me both then. Yeah, I think so. Because when I sent this out, I was like, oh, this is, everybody's going to have a specific one in mind, you know, or whatever. So it's interesting that we're the only two who had ever heard of that before. So maybe we're the cool kids.
Cool kids on the block.
So, Michael, you get the star because, as Nicole said, you like nailed it on its head. That's exactly a definition for it. So, with that being said, do you think that there really should be, or do you believe that there is a unicorn wine? Is there a unicorn wine for you? Should it be a single entity? Everybody wants this wine. What do we think of that? Nicole? Michael?
Yeah, so boy, that's an interesting question. So you look at it, and should there be a unicorn wine? I'm not sure there should be one, because I think you're always evolving, you're always looking for perfection, you're always looking for the next best thing, you're always, there's always a twist, there's a better season, there's a better weather, there's the great varietal, changes by location. It's hard to say that there is just a single unicorn wine, but I think we've all tasted a handful of the best wines we've ever had and wish we had more in our cellar.
Oh, well, absolutely true. Yes.
Yeah.
Nicole, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's just one, and I think it's probably different for everybody because, like, you know, there's so many different wine tastes out there, and I think depending on sort of, like, what wine crowd you're in, probably those crowds have different unicorns, or maybe you have many, and I think I'd like to have lots.
Maria, what about you?
Well, I wasn't sure if I had ever had a unicorn wine or what my unicorn wine would have been. So I just started thinking about a wine that I had been really looking forward to trying at some point. Not that it was like the wine that everybody knows, but like Nicole said, I was kind of just going to approach it from what my unicorn wine would have been. But I mean, I think that there's definitely wines out there that we're all striving to try at some point. Mm-hmm. And if we can define it that way, then it probably is something different for all of us, but I think there's something out there.
Deb?
I think, you know, I didn't know what unicorn wine was, and I actually asked you, and I did some thinking on it, and, you know, you might want to say, you know, the Screaming Eagle, the Wu-Tang Rothschild from, you know, years by, but I think to me, a unicorn wine is when you're, you know, when you have that opportunity to taste something rare that you would never have that opportunity to taste, whether you're at a winery and they go into their cellar and pull out a 1950 something wine or, you know, something special to them. I think that to me is a unicorn wine, because that is something that I would not normally be able to taste, and that I'm privileged at that moment to be tasting.
I think you're totally right with that.
Yeah.
So that's my thought process.
That's kind of how I think of a unicorn wine, because I think if it's something that we've never had, that is almost unattainable, so rare, I don't necessarily know that it's even there. In all honesty, right? There's wines out there that I have no clue. And that's one of the things I love about our group of wine lovers is, you know, we post things and I'm like, oh my God, I've never even heard of that wine. Meanwhile, I read the comments and everybody's like, oh my God, that's the best thing. You know, and I'm like, okay, so that could be my unicorn because I had never even heard of that region before.
So I've had wine that Heidi Barron has made under Lambert. And it's been great. Dom Perignon, people are like, oh, I just would love a Dom Perignon. I've had that recently when somebody paid off their mortgage. It wasn't me. But they celebrated and they brought over a Dom Perignon. So, you know, is that a unicorn wine to me? It's something, okay, I marked off my checklist. But to me, it's got something special, and when that person is sharing that with you and you see that the love and the history and behind it, to me that's a unicorn.
Yeah, and I think there's other things too, just to like add on. It's not always about like it being a cult classic, right, or whatever. It can be something that's cool and interesting for any number of reasons. Like maybe it's something that has an unusual amount of age on it and you're getting to try it from an interesting region, or maybe it's a completely obscure region and
right,
that's why it's interesting.
Or maybe it was made experimentally.
Right.
Right.
And it worked out well.
Right. Could be. So I had mentioned Screaming Eagle to you, Deb, because that was, some people define a unicorn from something that they can't afford, a wine that if they had X amount of money, they would buy this wine, and that would kind of be a Screaming Eagle for many people. I mean, if somebody wanted to pour me Screaming Eagle, I'm obviously not going to say no, but it's not something that if I die before having a Screaming Eagle, that's going to be my regret of my life. But for others, the unicorn it has absolutely no dollar value. It's the, you know, this is such a rare thing to go by. So what would you say is the rarest wine, or have you had something that you consider is the rarest or very rare wine? Go ahead, anybody.
Oh my God. You know, I got the memory loss thing going with the age. I mean, I've been privileged to have a lot of, you know, really interesting wines. So I really, you know, I can't say, because, I mean, I've been in the cellars of Burgundy in, you know, small producers that they've pulled out some really wonderful things. I really can't say one thing over another.
Okay.
I'll actually jump in a little. So back in the day, back when I worked in the offices at Wine Spectator, I I was a coordinator, and I got to taste lots of different things. I got to taste an amazing variety of wines kind of all the time. And then on top of that, every year they have their wine experience in the travels around. Yeah. So I get to go. And that's kind of odd because you have like so many unicorns in one place at one time that you're almost like rushing to taste them all, and you almost can't absorb them, which is a whole different weird experience. But one that actually I call it a synesthetic experience because it sort of was like more than just tasting. It just exploded in my mouth and created all different kinds of sensations. Was the Krug Clos de Menil from like 1998 and 2000. Those are two that still stand out in my mind as like that's magic.
See, I think it doesn't have to be. You know, well, I mean, well, that kind of falls into all categories of a unicorn. But like, it doesn't, I agree, Deb, it doesn't need to fall in line to, is this wine $1,000 a bottle, you know, or plus, or is this, you know, they only made 10 or 1,000 bottles of it and you got one. I think that it can be very different. And if it's a unicorn, it's supposed to be so brilliant and so amazing. So I would think a unicorn wine would do what Nicole was saying, is it just like burst out in all different, you know, memory and explosion.
The whole price thing doesn't necessarily, in that case, that one, yes, it's super expensive. But there were plenty of other unicorn wines that I tasted during that time that were not, they were good.
Right.
They were even really good, but they didn't do that. They didn't do the magic, right?
And yeah. So Maria, any unicorn wine memory?
The one that I was able to think of is a Pinot Noir that I actually just had a few weeks back. And it kind of goes more along the lines of what Debbie was saying about having an experience with a loved one and just wanting to have a special wine. The Pinot Noir that we tried, it was called Ocio, and it's a Chilean wine by a brand called Conocer. And it's one that I had been hearing about because I'm familiar with the brand. I've been hearing about it on and off for a few years, and it just kept making me want to try it more and more and more. And finally, I was able to find it a few months back here in Costa Rica. And it goes along, again, too, with the price point that you were saying. It's a $100 bottle of wine, which we don't ever buy, but we were celebrating our 20-year anniversary this year. So I think it checks a lot of those boxes. It was expensive. It was special. We celebrated with it. I'd say that was our unicorn wine by that definition anyways. And it's actually what I'm writing about this week for my entry.
Oh, is that a bug?
Those are bugs?
No, that's like a monkey or something, no?
That's like an animal.
She's staying quiet and talking because something's going to attack her. Blink twice if you're okay.
Maria?
I'm sorry. It's still breaking up. If you asked me something, I couldn't hear you.
We were worried about you. We heard that loud noise.
We thought Bigfoot was attacking you.
But to bring it back to Maria, I actually had that wine in New York. I was at a Colangelo marketing Christmas party, and Connoisseur was there, and they were pouring that wine. So as soon as I saw you posting that, I was so happy for you because it's a beautiful wine. And I think it does fall into a unicorn thing because like you don't see that normally. Like I had never seen that label anywhere except at the Christmas party, and then you know you found it in Costa Rica. So, but I don't think it's a very well distributed bottle anyway. So.
Yeah, the thing that's crazy is I do like quarterly wine chats with Connoisseur, and everybody always would talk about the Osio from like people in Europe and people in wherever else. And I'm like, where is it? Like, how can I never find it? Like, I go into wine shops and I ask them, do you have Osio? And they say, no, like, we don't have it. And it was through one of the chats that I told them. I said, I'm in Costa Rica. Where can I find it? Like, can I find it somewhere? And they said, you have to go to San Jose, which is the capital here. There's a shop that carries it, and that's where you can find it. And so this year, when we flew in to San Jose, I was like, okay, I'm going to find that shop. Like, I don't care where it is or what I have to do. I'm going to that shop to get that wine. So, I mean, it was awesome, and it was an adventure, and then everybody there spoke Spanish. And, I mean, I do speak Spanish well enough to get through everything here. I mean, the people that we live near, they don't speak English, so all we do is speak Spanish. But I was like, gushing in Spanish, like, oh my God, I'm finally tasting the wine. I can't believe it. I'm so excited. And I was like, I didn't even know I knew those words in Spanish. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know where they hide that wine. It's definitely not one that you can find.
I kind of have a question in terms, again, with the unicorn wine, because it's not necessarily a price point wine. It has, you know, it has so much. Now, Maria, you bought that specifically for an event. But if you have a unicorn wine and then you finally find it, are you rushing home and opening it, or are you coveting it in your cellar? And then part B of that question is, I mean, I think my unicorn wines have always been at a tasting, so I haven't had the opportunity to actually have the bottle. But so let's go with question one is, if you actually obtain a unicorn wine, bottle form, what do you do with it?
I mean, I would think that if we didn't have a special occasion, then I would have found a way to wait to have it. And I mean, we did even wait like 6 weeks after we bought it because it wasn't the anniversary yet. But as you guys know, with me, saving a bottle of wine is like the world's hardest thing because I don't live in one place. I live in a million different places, so I have no wine cellar. I just have to buy wine for the day or whatever for the moment, and that's it, because I don't have anywhere to save it. I would have had to make up an occasion, I guess, since I found it.
Nicole, what about you?
I do have a lot of things stored, both here and still in New York, actually. but I'm thinking that if for whatever reason I am forced to have a at-home birthday this year, I might actually purchase one of my unicorns and to have it home, because why not?
And you would open it for your birthday.
Yeah, so I guess both is the answer.
But where in New York is your cellar? Because I'll go, like, take anything out of it for you.
Yeah, we can help you with that cellar. And Michael, what about you? If you finally obtained a unicorn wine of yours, are you coveting it, or are you popping that bad boy?
Well, a little bit of both, actually. And So over the years, and obviously doing this for a long time, I have found some unicorn wines. And one had won the 1981 Best Cabernet of the World in 1981. Oh. And I bought this in 82 from a broker. And I had 6 bottles of it. And at that time, I can't remember, it was probably ridiculously expensive, $150 back in 82. And so I kept that. And we opened a bottle, thought it was wonderful. And that was a 77 Sassicaia. Okay. And then but at that time a lot of people were having kids. And so when they had their first kid, I would bring a bottle of that to the hospital.
Aww.
And give that to their birth of their first child. And it was a very nice bottle of wine. So that's where you kind of share it for those occasions. Okay. But we were literally in Italy a couple of trips ago, and we found a bottle of the 77 Sassicaia in this village of 162 people up in the middle of nowhere in Tuscany. And I said, oh, I've got to get that bottle, because I've since gotten rid of all those bottles. And I said, I would like to. So there was my unicorn wine sitting in this dusty metal cabinet. And I said, I need to buy that bottle. And the guy says, so the little old Italian guy comes out, and he says, well, he says, I sell it to you. He says, 350 euros. And I said, nah, that's okay. That's all right. You know, so it had that wine is a unicorn wine, but I wouldn't just buy it for any.
Okay.
Go over the top to buy it again.
Okay. And Deb, anything about that? Like, would you covet or pop it?
I've experienced things getting lost in the wine cellar, and then when we went to open it, it's not that good. It's some really, really good stuff. So I'm at the point, and probably maybe even the stage of my life, it's, you know, if it's good, okay, maybe I'll wait a year or two, but nothing more, because otherwise it's just going to get lost. When is a good time? Are you saving it for that special occasion? Is that special occasion ever going to come?
Right.
Maybe, maybe not. So drink it and enjoy it with the friends that you want to enjoy it with. And that will know that will appreciate it as much as you do.
Good.
And it's a good point.
Yep. Yep.
So that's my feeling of it.
And now a word from our sponsor. Dracena Wines hopes that you and your loved ones are safe and healthy. As we navigate our way through these murky waters, we know that wine can help keep us on track. Without the ability to pour our wines for you, we realize that you may be hesitant to purchase. We understand that delivery charges are a big hindrance in choosing what wines you consume. To help with that concern, we are currently offering $5 shipping on any $130 purchase. In addition, our six-pack offer is still available. Receive two bottles of our 92-rated 2017 Classic Cabernet Franc, two bottles of our Best of Show 2016 Reserve Cabernet Franc, and two bottles of our Double Gold winning 2017 Reserve Cabernet Franc, delivered to your door for only $220. That is over a $50 savings. Now is the time to give us a try or to replenish your collection. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories, and we all can use some great memories right about now. So if this unicorn wine, if we actually purchase it, okay, we find this wine and we purchase it, not the fact that unicorn necessarily means dollar value, but I was watching a show, you know, because what is it? Really horrible show, I know, but I love it. Supernatural. And in it, they were talking about some artwork, and the person said, should we authenticate it? And they were like, nah, they think it's authentic, so it's all good to go. So if you have a unicorn wine and it is one of those wines that's that mystery label, that whatever, would you want to have it authenticated before you pulled the trigger?
I think if I was going to pay that kind of money for a wine, then I can't see that happening. Then yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think most of the wines that I purchase are just from the winery at the time, or just came out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a little different than Debbie. I hold my wines about 10 years before I drink them, a minimum of 10 years before I drink them. So the good stuff, I mean, we have everyday wine too, but the stuff that's really in the cellar and collecting dust, those wines are meant, and, you know, at some point, to your point, Debbie, you want to enjoy them. And so if we have some friends over we haven't seen for a while and we're having a nice steak, we're going to open up a nice, you know, nice bottle or two for something like that. but I still always keep wines aging and maturing and changing and evolving, because I think that some of these things will be phenomenal down the road. Okay.
But if your unicorn is something that's already aged, that's what I'm saying, it's already aged, are you, and you purchase it, are you like, oh my God, I finally have this, I can't drink it? You know, or are you like, oh my God, I finally have this, the minute I get home, I'm popping it, doing whatever, you know, decanting or whatever I need to do to it, and drinking it. So I guess my question is, are you, partying that you got it, or are you, you know, holding it in and secretly enjoying that you have it?
You know, you guys know Colin McPhail. He runs a consulting business in Calistoga, California, but he used to be with Larkmead. And he wrote an article a year or so ago about the worst people are collectors, if they're just collecting to be collecting. Mm-hmm. That you want to collect, but to enjoy and have occasions to drink that wine, not just to put your arms around it and hold it tight forever. You've got to be able to enjoy it to that time that it gets to its full maturity, but absolutely drink it and enjoy it with mm-hmm. friends.
Okay. Anybody else? Cole?
No, I agree. I think, I have things that I'm holding, but my intention is to drink them someday, and maybe I need to create more occasions, but I'm kind of always trying to come up with, I try to create the occasions.
Right.
There are very few wines that I just don't see myself paying the money, even if I had it, unless I just, won the lottery. I just don't see myself paying the crazy, crazy prices that for a bottle that would need
need the authenticity.
I have to agree with you, because that money can be used so much in a different way in family life. I mean,
right. Okay.
Right. And
unless I had that discretionary income.
Yeah. Like I can, like maybe a few hundred dollars, but something like something that's like crazy, crazy thousands of dollars. There's just very few that I've had that I'm like, yeah, I paid for this.
Okay. That's always our second question, to Mike and myself, when we're tasting wine, when we're out or whatever, I'm like, oh my God, this wine is great. Or, I'll be at an event where I'm tasting more of these potential unicorns, and I'll come home and I'll say to Mike, oh my God, I had this wine, but boy, and he'll say, well, how much was it? And I'll say, he's like, okay, now what would you pay for it? It does make that price does make a difference. I think I just spent the most amount I've ever spent on a bottle, because Mike and I got married in 1995. And so we're coming up on a big anniversary, and I wanted a 1995 wine. I wanted a 1995 Bordeaux. So it's more, I'm telling him it's a gift for him. but that's, that's probably the most amount I have ever spent on a wine. And we're not talking thousands of dollars at all. So I don't know. I think the unicorn wines for me go back to, like Debbie started, it's an experience. It's something that not necessarily is something I'm going to buy.
And I think everybody's unicorn wine is different. And for everybody, it is different. But I don't think it's about price. I think it's experience. I mean, because you're not going to experience this. It might be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It might be something somebody's sharing with you that's an older vintage or an experiment. I just think that that's what you have to hold. and have the wings and fly.
I will throw in that there's also, like, there are wines that are maybe unicorns for me that they're unicorns because they've just eluded me. Like, I just haven't, like, the occasion, even through tastings, even through all the wonderful experiences we get to be a part of, I just haven't had the chance to try them. And they're sort of, they've been on my radar for a very long time. So I feel like there's like the personal unicorns that just seem to slip our grasp. Like that's a, right. Like for me, some of those are like the Salas champagnes. I've never had one. So it's not because I don't know about them and not because I'm not super interested. It just like, just hasn't quite happened.
Right.
Yes. So I think I mentioned I had been up tasting at a private event up in Napa, and this guy came out with a new wine that was $5,000. So it beat Screaming Eagle by 3x the price of Screaming Eagle. And he did it just because he wanted to, you know, pat his chest saying, I make the most expensive wine in Napa Valley at $5,000 a bottle. And it was nothing. I mean, it was like I have all kinds of wines between $150 and $300 that would beat that every day of the week. And it's just to me, and because again, it was a whole story with his whole ego and everything. That wine had no appeal to me because of the winemaker and the owner and his attitude about the wine. Whereas there's other wines that Melka or that are reasonably priced wines, priced wines, meaning nice, you know, that in that $175 to $300 kind of range, that are really good wines. And those are wines that have a better appeal to me and will still age and still are age worthy to continue on. And those are for special occasions like to Debbie or Lori for anniversaries or for New Year's Eve. We always pull out a nice bottle for New Year's Eve. We do these types of things for birthdays, etc. But not tonight for burgers. For tonight for burgers, we're going to, you know, we'll pop something. I mean, the average price in the cellar is still three digits. So it's not like they're cheap wines in there, you know. So it's, but we'll pull out something that is, you know, a $30, $40 bottle.
You're not pulling out a Melka.
What?
You're not pulling out a Melka.
I'm not pulling out a Melka tonight for burgers. No, no, not going to go there. And I have a lot of his wines. And so we purposely collected a lot of, we follow winemakers over the years. Mm-hmm. And we have got a lot of different winemakers that we have followed over the years. But I'm not opening anything like that. We're going to open a very nice wine. But not, it's an everyday wine as opposed to something that's over the top. Whenever we're not supposed to talk about tonight ends, we are going to open a nice bottle of wine.
We're all going to come to your house, and we're going to sit in your cellar while you open that bottle.
Okay, you're welcome to.
Nicole, what were you going to say?
That a couple of years ago, I want to say, I read an article by Eric Asimov that was like, I think it was called like In Praise of the Everyday Wine, something like this, and I really thought that was a lovely sentiment because, I mean, we talked a good big game about all these fancy bottles that we've had the pleasure to drink, but honestly, my everyday bottle is still in that $15 to $25 category, and I think because of that, you end up creating more memories with some of these wines that make it into like a rotation, because they're just there. They're a part of your everyday life. They kind of become a little bit more of the fabric in a nice way.
Right. So. I agree with that. Well, I mean, I think that I don't technically have a house wine. I know so many people, you know, they buy a wine by like the case and that's what they always have. I tend to have wineries that would be my go-to, you know, I get that. The one of the wines I truly like is a Garnacha, and it is the stupidest label on the face of the earth. And I'm like kind of embarrassed that I enjoy this wine because of that label. But it is a $10.99 bottle of Garnacha, and I will go to that left and right. And every time I go to the wine shop,
you should be embarrassed about it.
No, the label is what I need to be about.
Because you know what? Some of the wines my go to, you know, every day, things that I really like, they're inexpensive wines.
Yeah.
They're like $15 and less.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And sometimes also you have to take note, you know, you might get, you know, try a bottle of a expensive wine, you know, say $50, whatever's expensive to you, $50, $100, and it might not be what you really thought it would be.
Absolutely.
Your $10 bottle of wine outweighed it. So you really, you know, you have to take that into consideration.
Right.
And, you know.
Absolutely agree.
Where the unicorn falls.
Right. And for different reasons. Different reasons.
Yep.
Yeah. And for a different reason, you know, in the wine cellar, there's a lit row of display bottles, you know, that go around the
right.
cellar that are lit up. And there's, you know, just 69 bottles that are lined up around the cellar that are lit up. And then there's just stacks up and below and above. But of the wines, I can tell you that there's a $30 Chardonnay that sits on that display shelf, and there's $300 bottles of wine that sit on the display shelf. But the $30 bottle of wine that sits on the display shelf is a very good friend who's in the wine business, and we met her 20 plus years ago, and we have formed a relationship, and so I want to display her wine. Mm-hmm. It has nothing, so it's not the cost of the wine, it's the sentiment that goes okay. behind it.
Excellent. All right, guys, any final words on what you think of a unicorn wine? Anything before we get to our wonderful riddle?
I think we need to enjoy it whatever your unicorn wine is, and wherever you are enjoying it, whoever uncorks it for you, enjoy it and savor the moment.
Very good. All good? Are we ready for our thinking caps?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Here we go. So I have been on a run of watching one of my favorite movies of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. So this is actually from Lord of the Rings. Well, technically The Hobbit. But here we go. Ready? What has roots as nobody sees, it's taller than trees. Up, up, up it goes, but it never grows.
I'm in New Zealand, but I never read The Hobbit.
This is when he's talking to Gollum. This is one of the riddles that Gollum tells him to have to solve so he doesn't die. So it's not an easy one, but I got sucked into the rabbit hole there of Lord of the Rings. So here it is again. What has roots as nobody sees? It's taller than trees. Up, up it goes, but it never grows. And as a hint, I'll say the roots thing is, I don't think it should have been a legal riddle for Gollum and
what is a great bag of.
It has nothing to do with, well, I can't say it has nothing to do with wine, but it doesn't directly have anything to do with wine. It doesn't technically have roots in terms of what people think about, but you just can't see the bottom of it.
The sky?
Galaxy? You're not. Well, you started off on the right track, but I've diverted. It's a mountain. It's a mountain, right? So it does have roots. It's you know, down there. It's not, you know, it's got roots, but you don't see it. It's definitely taller than every tree. You look at it, it goes up, 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 but, you know, it doesn't grow.
Oh, no, wait a minute now. So I was.
They sink, Michael. They sink, Michael. They don't grow unless there's an earthquake. And that's not growing.
So I was in high-tech GPS for years. And we actually measured the Mount Everest And Mount Everest is actually growing at about a quarter of an inch per year.
Is it growing, or is the tectonic plate pushing it up?
The tectonic's pushing it up, yes.
Well, there is not growing there.
Well, it's getting taller.
But you're not increasing matter. I'm going to go biology here. Biology outrules geology. All right, guys. So we're at the point where you're going to give 1 minute goodbye to everybody, tell them where to find you on the socials. So, Michael, why don't you go first?
Michael Kelly, HTTPS, California Wines and Wineries. And the blog is on Facebook, California Wines and Wineries. And
Debbie.
I'm Debbie Giaquindo. You can find me at HudsonValleyWineGoddess.com. I'm HB Wine Goddess on Twitter, HB Wine Goddess on Instagram, Hudson Valley Wine Goddess on Facebook. And you can find Lori and I on WifeOfBitStreet.com.
And Maria?
Hey, everybody. This is Maria, trying to hear everything on the chat. I'm Wine and Cheese Friday, and you can find me on most of the networks at Wine Cheese Fry, F-R-I, for Friday.
Awesome. And Nicole?
And I am at nibblinggypsy.com and songstable.com. Nibbling Gypsy is that just across all platforms, and then the Songs Table on Instagram.
And again, I am your host, Lori, and I can be found on all of the socials for the winery at Dracena Wines, and the blog and podcast are at Exploring the Wine Glass, except on Twitter, because that's way too many letters for it. So it's just Explore Wine Glass without the E in Explore. So thank you guys for joining, and I am so happy to see your faces, and I hope that you continue to drink well. All right, so thank you for everything. And
cheers.
My glass is empty, but I still cheers to you guys. All right, till we see you again.
Cheers.
See you again. Bye, guys.
Bye.
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 This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week. Sláinte.